Okay, let's make it official. This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 114D, page 422. My colleague Brett is editing these up, you know, and sometimes I know I don't give him just a real clean transition between the different hour-long programs, you know, because a number of them are A, B, C, D, E, and so forth. And they're just that way to facilitate the rapidity with which they can be made. So the seven stars of the Great Bear are the originating sources of the seven rays of our solar system, but there are septenates on all levels, and there are prototypes of those seven rays, and higher septenates, certainly, than the seven rays per se. And as I've been saying, I expect that from the Little Bear, there's another seven having to do more with the heart and wisdom aspect, and from the Pleiades, another seven, I suspect. Making 21, making 22 if you count the whole as one. So the seven rishis of the Great Bear express themselves through the medium of the planetary logoi, who are their representatives and to whom they stand in relation to the prototype. And what I've done in the last part of the previous program is to add the solar logoic point to make a triangle there, and I've offered some examples. You may remember that with the Great Bear, at least one of the assignments of rays is Al-Kaid or Benet Nash, two different names, ray one, Alcor Mizar, two stars, two names, ray two, Eliot, ray three, Megrez, ray four, Dubay, ray five, Merrick, ray 6, Fegda, ray 7. That's one way of doing it. And some of the lore surrounding these stars found in Richard Hinckley Allen's book on the stars, Star Names, seem to confirm this. Certainly they confirm Benet Nash, Al-Kaid, ray 1, when the bear flicks its tail. The nations and civilizations are destroyed. And there's a lot of serpent symbolism with Fegda. And it seems to me that if we start counting from one, the tail is obviously 1, 2, 3. And then where the tail joins the cup, it's Megrez, which has to be ray 4. So given the fact that Fegda has serpent symbolism, we'd have to go across for the fifth ray, across the top of the cup, to Dubay, which DK connects with Leo anyway, which is the fifth sign, and with personality, and with the way ray 5 delimits the ring pass knot of personality and contributes to the sense of personality isolation. Then all that's left is Merrick for ray 6, interestingly, in this case, connected with Aries, which has expresses through quite a bit of ray 6 through the conventional rulership of Mars. So the seven planetary gods manifest through the medium of seven sacred planets, through planetary schemes, each of which has a sacred planet. And each of these seven rays is transmitted into our solar system through the medium of the three constellations and their ruling planets. And, you know, what I'm seeking to understand for myself is what role is played by the stars in the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, which stars are also related to the seven sacred planets. These I sometimes just pose questions as if I'm asking the great beyond, what these, what the answer really is. In a way, I'm posing the question to Master DK, or I'm posing the question to my own intuition. At least propose a question, I think. And if one does that, the in living the invocative life, the answer may well come. All right. So here's that tabulation of interrelated triangles. And again, this is sort of repeated on page 490 and 590, a more complete version of it. rays, planets, constellations, orthodox, esoteric. I seem to want to make these a little smaller. Then maybe various alignments will appear. And what I can do is go into the astrology book itself and see whether the alignments there are a little more representative of what DK is trying to get across. So we're here on page approximately 424. And, are we there? Maybe not. Will, purpose, hierarchy. Well, here it is. Right. Well, it's much more aligned, isn't it? Yes. And if it's possible to get these into line, I'd like to be able to do that. Well, here they are, lined up a little better. And I think what I'd have to do almost here is to make these three, separate this one, and here are the orthodox and esoteric planets, and make them a little smaller, and here are the constellations. So this is one possibility. I think you can gather what it's all about here. So with the first ray is going through Aries, Leo, Capricorn. This is not news to us. We have studied this a little bit before. And going through Leo, which is ruled by the Sun, but the Sun sub Neptune and the Sun sub Uranus, and ruled by Saturn, which Capricorn, which has two Saturnian rulerships. We're only going as far as the esoteric rulerships here. We're not including the hierarchical, but on later charts, the hierarchical rulership is included. And I like that lineup a little better. Whatever little seventh ray I have, it occasionally comes through. So we do see that the first ray, simply because of rulership, will be transmitted through Mars and Mercury. Mars has some first ray. Mercury, I don't think, does. First ray will be transmitted through the Sun sub Neptune. I don't think there's first ray in Neptune, except it may be one of three planets through which a first ray person of the solar logoic trinity works. And through Uranus, and there is definite first ray through Uranus in its monad, Capricorn will distribute first ray, and the first ray will come through Saturn, and there is in Saturn some first ray, maybe, what would we say, maybe a first ray personality, maybe, I used to speculate that it was a first ray soul, third ray monad of that for sure, and a seventh ray personality, that remains to be seen. When it comes to the transmissions here, of love, wisdom, the three constellations are Gemini, Virgo, and Mercury. Each has distinction. Gemini is said to be maybe the most important of the, and even the most powerful of the constellations which transmit the seventh ray. Virgo is the constellation to which more of the second ray, did I say seventh ray, I meant second. Virgo is the constellation through which more of the second ray comes at this time, and Pisces, as a cosmic decanate representing the second ray, always seems to me to be the most powerful. So the second ray will come through these three constellations that we're used to. Gemini only, it's the only listed ray through Gemini, but the second and sixth ray are both listed in relation to Virgo and Pisces. I suppose, having a little more to do with engagement with form, and the six rules form. But the second ray will come through Mercury, and it will come through Venus as a ruler, and this has to be borne in mind. So whether or not there is second ray in Mercury, though certainly the 2-4-6 line, represented by the fourth ray soul, the second ray will come through no matter what. Venus has a lot of second ray, probably a second ray monad, maybe a second ray personality. But in any case, the second ray comes through Venus. Then through Mercury again, and strangely through the Moon, which really does not represent the Moon per se. It is Vulcan, and it is Neptune. Those are the two planets veiled by the esoteric Moon in Virgo. But Vulcan is connected with the heart of the Sun and has a deeply interior fourth ray and maybe even higher second ray. And Neptune has a second ray monad, so there's a easy line of transmission there. As far as Pisces goes, Jupiter with its second ray soul, second ray through Pluto? Ha ha! That's almost contradictory, isn't it? As far as I know, Pluto has no second ray in its system, therefore no resonance with the second ray that is being passed through it. But somehow, out of all destruction will come reconstruction. That, I think, is one way to consider Pluto's conduit of the second ray. We move here to active intelligence. And, as I say, Cancer transmits the third ray to the masses and Capricorn to the disciples. And Libra is a sign closely related to the third aspect with its triple rulership of law, sex, and money, rays 1, 2, and 3, respectively. The Moon doesn't really veil anything in Cancer. Exoterically, but in a sense, the Moon is always representing Neptune in Cancer, and DK says that Cancer is ruled on all three levels by Neptune, so the Moon is, I think, veiling Neptune. Neptune has a trident. It's got a three connected with it. It's connected with the waters of space, which are matter, and matter is particularly ruled by the third ray of active intelligence. So the same goes for the esoteric position. When it comes to Libra, well, we've seen before how Venus takes up the place of the monastic permanent atom among the triple principles, as the three major principles as they now manifest in our solar system, through Saturn, Jupiter, and Venus, Venus upholding the intelligence line. So there is active intelligence on a higher level. Uranus does have ray 3 connected with it. Rules all kinds of moves and migrations, and things are not very settled. They're in constant movement when Uranus is effective. Maybe it has a Ray 3 personality. Some have said Ray 5, but Ray 3 is there, and DK does deal with that, and I think I've gone over that before. As far as Capricorn goes, the third aspect of intelligence to the disciples, Saturn is a quintessentially third ray planet, monadically at least, and maybe in its soul as well. Generally speaking, DK gives the soul rays of sacred planets. So if he gives the seventh ray of Uranus, and we know it's a ray one monad, then that seventh ray must be the soul ray of Uranus. When it comes to Neptune, he gives the sixth ray, so we feel that since it is the second ray monad, then Neptune must have a sixth ray soul. Now the only one left is Saturn. And he gives the third ray. Now if he's in the habit of giving soul rays, then the ray of Saturn is the third ray, and its monadic ray is already confirmed as the third ray, called an esoteric ray. Sometimes when the DK uses the word esoteric, he really means monadic. And I think it's on page 420 or so of Esoteric Psychology 1. Saturn is coming in then as the third ray monad, and perhaps with a third ray soul, a very third ray planet. It has a powerful first ray connected with it as well, and maybe physically, in terms of its tendency to fix things in space, it has a seventh ray. Now we get into the rays of attribute, and we have we have the fourth ray of harmony through conflict. And this is coming strongly through the Taurus-Scorpio axis, and Sagittarius is also included, as it was so prominent at the time of the birth of the fourth kingdom, or at least maybe its fourth ray made that possible. Taurus is not the leading constellation to which the fourth ray comes, but take a look. I mean, this is unusual. The fourth ray is transmitted through Venus via its rulership of Taurus. And with Vulcan, I feel the monadic ray, or the lower of the two monadic rays, which I hypothesize, is the fourth ray ruler of Vulcan. When it comes to Scorpio, it is the constellation which most powerfully distributes the fourth ray at this time. And Mars, the planet of battle and warriorship, does not have, I think, fourth ray in its makeup, but it is a, I think, a resonant distributor of the fourth ray, because it usually engages in conflict, but doesn't harmonize. Well, at least the conflict side can go through it. When it comes to Sagittarius, how interesting, Jupiter as a fourth ray planet. Now, all I can say is if you look at the glyph of Jupiter, which I do not have before my eyes at the moment, we see it looks like the number four. I suppose drawing it in the air like that, it's going to look exactly backwards. But Jupiter looks like a number four. And the number four is mentioned in connection with it. And there's, let's see, how we would look at this is we would go to esoteric healing. It's my way of getting there. And then back up. No, back up this way. Now here is Jupiter. The school of beneficent magicians has a strong seventh ray. The planet is sometimes called, in the parlance of the schools, the college of quadruple. There's your four force units. For its members wield four kinds of force in constructive and magical work. Can it be that Jupiter actually has fourth ray connected with it? Well, every planet does have all the rays, of course. But I'm talking about a ray of prominence. Another name given to its halls is the Palace of Opulence, for its graduates work with the law of supply and are frequently called the sowers. Well, anyway, the number four is strongly connected with Jupiter and with the Earth being the fourth from the planet. The major rays of Earth are 1, 2, and 3, but the mind of the Earth entity or of the planetary logos may be the fourth, because he becomes, well, we become, in representation of him, adjudicators between the pairs of opposites. So we are always having to consider the two and their relationship to each other, soul and personality, spirit and matter, and so forth. So this has some unusual transmissions here, doesn't it? Venus, fourth ray, Mars, fourth ray, Jupiter, fourth ray, and the Earth, well, with its symbol of the cross, which is a fourfold figure, and its fourth place from the sun in terms of major planets, it is closely connected with the fourth ray. There's so much struggle on our planet, and we are attempting, as a result of this struggle, to bring harmony out of conflict. Interesting that both Venus and the Earth then carry the fourth ray, and perhaps they can make right accommodation with each other. When it comes to the fifth ray, okay, it is the ray of concrete science. Okay, I'm getting there now. It's nice to have things lined up, otherwise thoughts tend to be messy if you're looking at a tabulation where there's a mess. It's the fifth ray. It's one of the rays of Leo, so is the first. Sagittarius, one of the rays of Sagittarius is the fifth ray for the explorative spirit, where we go there to find out what is. Fourth ray is also there. And Aquarius, is the fifth ray is the only ray given coming through Aquarius, but we feel, you know, there can be plenty of the third ray for its constant mobility, and maybe seventh, maybe second. movie first. It's not necessarily the case that every constellation has three major rays. Maybe sometimes, like Saturn, the ray of the personality and monad are the same. This may also be the case for our solar logos in the last analysis. After we get beyond his possible fourth ray monad, the four will have to change towards the two. I mean, the final monadic ray of any entity has to be one of the three rays, but that doesn't mean that there are not seven monadic types. The fifth ray is coming through Leo, the fifth sign, certainly, but it's also coming through the Sun, which is veiling Neptune, and there's no particular reason for that. Let's just say the fifth ray contributes to the luminosity which the Sun bestows. With respect to Uranus, veiled by the Sun in the hierarchical esoteric position, we have Uranus strongly connected with electricity and fifth ray souls making the transit onto the first ray most often, although one would wonder why the third ray couldn't be a recipient of fifth ray soul effort. I'll put that one up to Master DK. Maybe he'll answer that at some point. So the Sun in this particular case through Uranus transmits the scientific fifth ray. And Leo is a fifth sign. It's a sign often involved in science and in those areas which bring more light to any inquiry. With Sagittarius, you know, the search and discover motivation. But now look at Jupiter, fifth ray. This is something you wouldn't expect, and yet somehow Jupiter will have to be, because it is ruler of Sagittarius, a transmitter, at least, of the explorative fifth ray. The Earth, fifth ray, well, it's getting there. The more it comes under Venusian influence with its strong fifth ray, the more the fifth ray will be demonstrated, and the closer we come to the third in a series of cosmic initiations, not cosmic initiations, but a secondary series, the more fifth ray we will express on our planet, the closer we head towards mental polarization. See, there are rays that are actually part of the ray structure, and those that we express because we are at a certain point in evolution where that ray is called for. Then through Aquarius is the only ray given through Aquarius, although we can think of others. And this is a scientific sign, and the age of Aquarius will be a scientific age in which many subtle energies will be mastered. Uranus is the first ruler, and it does have some fifth ray, and then Jupiter again. So hard to think of a connection of Jupiter to the fifth ray, except that Jupiter will constantly expand the consciousness until illumination comes from this brightest of all the rays. So it's, you know, it's important to take these things one by one and conscientiously. Well, we're into the sixth ray of devotion, so rampant in the world today. Okay. All right. That's Jupiter. And Pluto, the sixth ray. Well, through Virgo, 2 and 6 comes through Sagittarius, 4, 5, and 6, and 6 is the strongest through Sagittarius and through Pisces, 2 and 6. Pisces, the quintessentially second-ray sign, yet also so connected with the ocean and the astral body, which is correlated with the 6, and, you know, go forth into matter and building form and so forth, the 6 is a strong correlation. 6 rays through Mercury, well, maybe aspirational idealism, as found in Taurus. We can even find kind of a sixth ray in relation to Taurus because of its high aspirational content. But there we go. Mercury is distributing ray 2 and ray 4 and ray 6. At least they pass through. I've never given sufficient attention to these additional rays which pass through the planets and which, as the planetary ray influences us, can be presumed to be carried with the ordinary rays, which are emitted by the planet. The moon, sixth ray, well, yes. Vulcan is not so much connected with the sixth ray, but Neptune, one of the veiled esoteric rulers of the esoteric moon, carries much sixth ray. Sagittarius through Jupiter, I would say so. Maybe even one of the rays of Jupiter, which is not normally accredited, could be the sixth ray. The monad of Jupiter could be, in a way, the seventh with a final one, but that is speculative. At least we are pretty confident the soul is ray two. The Earth, sixth ray. Well, the Earth as the esoteric ruler of Sagittarius, and of course the Earth is reaching out emotionally towards the status of Venus. It's quite a difference in their cosmic astral attainment, we are taught, with the Earth's vehicle, astral vehicle, not being quite under control, and Venus having done that, and being transfigured, I would say, initiate as a solar, is it a cosmic initiate of the third degree yet in the planetary line of initiations? Maybe. Venus, maybe. With Pisces, Jupiter, sixth ray, as I said, yes. Pluto does have a lot to do with the solar plexus, which is normally ruled by the first ray. Solar plexus is ruled by the sixth ray. The smoke, disappearing into the smoke of Hades. The door to Hades was the solar plexus because it was basically the astral plane. So Pluto could have a sixth ray component. It certainly is involved in fanaticism. When you see Mars and Pluto together, watch it, you know. Those two can cause a lot of destruction together because it's a blending of the first ray and the sixth ray, and if Pluto has some sixth ray as well. See, where is this statement? Just one word. There should be only one reference to the word smoke. And two of the other non-sacred planets, Mars and Pluto, function in connection with the sacral center. Now, normally we're given Uranus as the ruler of the sacral center, but from a more practical expression, Mars is very sacral. And the religions ruled by Mars have a strong sacral center emphasis, function in connection with the sacral center, Mars, and the solar plexus, Pluto. So there's our sixth-ray connection. This latter planet becomes active in the life of the man who is becoming alive in the higher sense. His lower nature passes into the smoke and darkness of Pluto. Sometimes when DK describes the astral plane, he says it's pretty smoky and not too transparent. Who governs the lesser burning ground? Pluto is involved with the lesser burning ground. I would say Mars is as well. Uranus is involved with the higher burning ground, we've been told. In order that man may live in truth, in the higher land of light, and not be overcome by that which emanates from the solar plexus and from the astral plane. Pluto, in a way, puts that to death, and I suppose Pluto, in connection with Scorpio, has a lot to do with making this change so that the lower nature, also ruled by Scorpio in a sense, passes into the smoke and darkness of Pluto. It is obscured. The lower nature is obscured. Pluto has a way of hiding things, of making them inaccessible, and also a way of bringing them to light. Both are the case. Okay, and now finally the seventh ray of ceremonial order. Not only does the first ray pass through Aries, but the seventh does constellationally. And then the seventh ray coming through Mars. Well, in the idea of regimentation, the military band, you know, usually you think of Mars and there's a lot of the sixth ray coming through, plenty of the first ray, and even some of the activity and even the third and the fifth ray. But here's the seventh ray. giving this possibility of regimentation, Mercury conveying the seventh ray. How interesting. Well, at least it does contribute to creating archetypal designs, which are affiliated with the seventh ray. When it comes to Cancer, yes, it's the third ray, seventh ray sign. And the moon is the ruler of the lowest of the creative hierarchies on the seventh plane. The moon has no natural radiation of its own, but it is connected with Vulcan. And in this particular case, it's connected with Neptune. The moon, however, has to do with defining the rhythms of our life, and the rhythmic factor is the seventh ray factor. With Neptune, it's hard to see seventh ray, except it does occur on the seventh plane, or will shortly, of the cosmic astral plane. Once that hierarchy which it rules is liberated onto the cosmic astral plane, it'll be to the seventh sublevel. And Neptune has a lot to do with manifestation, because desire, if followed far enough, will lead to manifestation. With Capricorn, there's no question. It is a sign which gives us the majority of the seventh ray at this time. And as I've said, I think there is a seventh ray component to the sometimes fixity and conformity we find in connection with Capricorn, with Saturn. It's not just a fluid and mobile planet. There's a certain rigidity that can occur with Saturn, and when things are fixed in a particular form and relationship, we tend to think also of the seventh ray. So this has been a little review of how unsuspected rays can come through planets which rule the sign or constellation in which those rays, through which those rays are expressed. Seventh ray Mercury, seventh ray Neptune, seventh ray Saturn, yes. Some of the odd ones, you know, some of the odd ones. Sixth ray Earth. And, well, sixth ray Moon, I think that's not too bad. Fifth ray Sun, not so likely, especially when connected with Neptune. Fifth ray Earth, well, increasingly so under the influence of Venus. Fifth ray Jupiter, not very much, except in as much as the fifth ray is connected with consciousness, which Jupiter rules. Fourth ray Mars, well, it's full of conflict. Fourth ray Earth, yes. Fourth ray Venus, a lot of people would like to think so, because Venus is your artistic planet, and the fourth ray is so often found to be the ray of the artist, but not exclusively so, as DK tells us, not exclusively so. Third ray Neptune, we can manage. Third ray Venus, not so much about the rays of Venus connect with the third ray, but the position it often undertakes in order to increase intellect. So the others go pretty well here. Second ray Mercury, well, second ray Moon. It is the form builder, but remember what we have there is really Vulcan and Neptune, both of which can be related to the second ray. And the strangest of all, in a sense, is second ray Pluto, which means that in our solar system, destruction and loss lead to the, cleaning the glasses there, revelation of love. So this adds to the intricacy that not only do we receive the rays which the planets emit, and from the various vehicles that they have, like, you know, Earth has those who are out there in space, and our solar system are receiving from the Earth the first, second, and third ray, especially the third, and to a degree the second. Now, just think about how our planet is evolved, mostly third ray at the moment. How much second ray of its emerging soul will other planets receive? Okay, well, now think about the stage of development of other planets. When we look at Mars, we get a lot of sixth ray from its personality. But what if it is increasing its first ray content and its soul content? Would we also receive the fifth ray? And DK does tell us about how Mars is connected with the concrete mind and with the five senses, so it is already having an effect. If it is the first ray monad on Mars, I think we will have a strong in our charts to look not only for the sixth ray, but for the first ray. So it depends on the rays of the planets themselves and which rays are presently activated in the life cycle of those planets. For Earth, we know the third ray is very, very strong, but the second ray is coming in. So if Earth is registering in the planet-centric horoscope of beings on a different planet, it will show a lot of third ray and activity, material activity, but probably interpreting the Earth will increasingly show the energy of love which unifies all that activity. Interesting to consider the astrology which might be found from other planetary perspectives. All right, so we've gone through this chart, and a similar chart will be found on page 590. I don't think we have to repeat every little thing here. The interesting thing has been unusual rays transmitted through planets which seem not to have much to do resonantly with those particular rays. Okay, at this time I purpose to trace certain major conditioning streams of energy as they proceed forth from their emanating source. You have to realize, of course, that Earth may receive their energies in a certain way, but some other planet or star located in quite a different position relatively, would receive their energies differently. So I purpose to trace a certain major conditioning streams of energy as they proceed forth from their emanating source via certain constellations and planets, and from within the radius of the Earth, reach the individual disciple, again, via certain major planetary centers. So what we have here is the mode of transmission, and DK hopes to make that clearer. He does do this in the 600s, around 610 or so of the book. We'll get to it, and he shows how ray energy, which is how transmitting, transfiguring, transforming, and what is the, how does it go? I think I may have forgotten that just a little bit, but we'll go here to page 610 and diagram 4, yes, transcending, transmitting, transforming, then transfiguring, and finally the recipient. So those are four areas, four levels, which proceed from an emanating source and eventually reach the Earth. So in this way, that great synthesis, which is qualified life in appearance. Notice how he starts to change these words around, life, quality, and appearance, but he uses the second aspect as an adjective, qualified life, which has taken appearance or manifestation, can be seen in definite activity, producing solar, planetary, and individual effects, and thus demonstrating that intricate relation which unites the human atom to the great lives. This is what we're interested in. The proper study of mankind is man. We're interested in the way we are affected by the great lives with whom we are connected by some form of resonance or rulership resonance. The great lives are the sum total of that which is manifested. So what is coming through us, what is being transmitted through our etheric body, what energies are we carrying, either unconsciously or deliberately. So he's going to give us the transmission of energies. He frequently does this. And when you have a meditation where you can ponder transmission, it can frequently be a method of successfully invoking these energies. I'm reminded of the energy descent in the process of soul fusion. the fusion formulas, where he begins with a certain aspect of the monad, then goes into a factor of the triad and into the soul and so forth until the integrating personality, which is fusing with the soul, receives those energies. So these various lines of descent, you know, we often hear that being descends, or let the healing energy descend. Yes, what are the lines of descent through which it passes? That is something we want to know, and I think he's going to give us that as he goes along here. At least some of the interesting ones, which will help us think about ones that he hasn't mentioned. Okay, friends, this is a little interpolation of about 20 minutes because I discovered that somehow I had my headset off, and it's taking place 2 days later, so I hope I can achieve some continuity. We've been talking about the great synthesis between the higher lives and those who are lower. We will be getting into a very important triangle that deals with the three great lives of the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades. In this way, that great synthesis, which is qualified life in appearance, notice the second aspect in the word qualified, and life, representing the first aspect, but really something even deeper than the first aspect, appearance always representing the third. Life is pure being in essence. It is something more than the first aspect, which is the aspect of will, but sometimes will and pure being are so closely related. A great synthesis can be seen in definite activity, producing solar, planetary, and individual effects, and we're going to discuss how these great triangles, the three great triangles descending through the zodiacal constellations and through the planets and into our planet and into the human being, do produce actually individual effects, planetary effects, and solar effects, and thus demonstrating the intricate relation which unites the human atom to the great lives, which are the sum total of that which is manifested. The analogy between the microcosm and macrocosm will be helpful. Now, usually when we consider the word microcosm, we mean man, usually. And when we consider the word macrocosm, we oftentimes mean the solar logos. But it is a term that can be used in a relative way. And so sometimes this term can mean the planetary logos as well, or something even far beyond the solar logos. But usually it has to do with the solar logos and his solar system. And the relation of the cell or atom in one of the abdominal organs, and we're speaking here of the human being, there's a great space, of course, between the cell and the atom. The atom is far smaller. In other words, the space between the cell and the atom is far greater in a way than that between the solar logos and any one of his planetary logoi, or should we say, between the solar logos and a man, as far as I can understand. The human being is a cell, monadically considered, within one of the seven great circles found on the monadic plane. And this is for the planetary logos, these circles are as well, they may have something to do with the head center. Much has to be determined here. I'm going to refer to this particular chart. There are seven great circles on the monadic plane. Now, the question is, what is the location of the etheric heart center of the solar logos? From one perspective, we can say that it is found upon the monadic plane of the cosmic physical plane. And then his head centers, etherically considered, will be found on the divine plane. But when we're talking about the When we're talking about the planetary logos, the question is, where should his heart center be found? Is it found in the same place? This has to be sorted out, because sometimes it appears that all of the seven chakras of a solar logos, or even of a planetary logos, are to be found on the buddhic plane. But if we consider the way that the higher centers of man, throat, heart, and head center, are found on the three superior subplanes of the etheric level, then we can imagine the analogy of the heart center being found on the subatomic plane. Well, the monadic plane is the subatomic plane, so perhaps for a solar logos, the heart center, etherically considered, is found on the subatomic plane, which is the second of the cosmic of the subplanes on the cosmic physical plane. So when we look at the planetary logos, however, it may be that he is one level lower, and that there are head centers to be found on the monadic plane, and not so much the heart center, and then everything would descend. The monadic level would involve head centers, the spiritual level heart centers, the intuitional level the throat center, and the vehicle itself would be the egoic lotus, or the collections of lotuses. In other words, we take 1, 2, 3, 4 for the planetary logos, and possibly for the solar logos, 1, 2, 3, 4, in which case the buddhic plane would provide the vehicle, the denser vehicle, or the repository of the triangle for the solar logos. This is a pretty abstruse matter here, and one which is, I think, of interest to be worked out in some final sense by those who in the schools have the time and patience to do it. So there is an analogy here between the abdominal organ, a cell in the abdominal organ, to the soul, and of man, the microcosm, to something much, much larger. If we look at this chart, we will see that the abdominal organ is located on the very, very lowest level, on the physical level of the dense physical plane, and we are rising up to the position of the soul in comparison with that. What sort of being would it be then, for whom man was as that tiny cellular or atomic life? Now, this is really an analogical feat, but if you think about man being located in his entirety on the six subplanes, the monad is found here, so the six cosmic subplanes, then these six cosmic subplanes, or let's even say seven, would have to be as the tiniest, would have to be as the lowest subplane. And what that would mean is that the entire cosmic physical plane would be as the very lowest subplane. So we would then need to have this entire cosmic physical plane as the lowest systemic subplane, and what we would have here, considering the seven cosmic planes, they would be simply the etheric physical plane of some much, much vaster being, and then a whole chart just like this would have to be found for the astral level, and a third chart, even higher, for the mental level. Now, what sort of being would that be if the monad of even our solar logos is found within the etheric physical level, cosmically speaking. We'd be dealing with a being far beyond the one about whom naught may be said. We'd be dealing with a being far beyond this cosmic parabrahm. I don't think I want to let my mind go there, because it's probably not profitable, but it gives some example, some idea of the scope of such a being to whom the entirety of man, including his monad, would be as a cell or atom in an abdominal organ. Now, if we just consider the human personality and we don't consider the monad, it's possible that what is super-diaphragmatic for the planetary logos, in other words, man has a higher status there, would be sub-diaphragmatic for the solar logos. And then we would have a man, the personality, occupying a sub-diaphragmatic position, or some sort of cell in a sub-diaphragmatic position, compared to a super-diaphragmatic position, a cell in some sort of organ higher in the body for the planetary logos. Let's just say that the greater the encompassing being, the lower the position of man. So since the solar logos is in fact greater than the planetary, logos, what would be abdominal or subdiaphragmatic for the solar logos would be superdiaphragmatic, perhaps more in the area of the throat center, organs in the area of the throat center for the planetary logos. Well, this power of analogy will be highly developed as we move into the new schools, and as the ability to think in correspondential terms is given close attention. So, from the abdomen to the soul, from the man as a personality, maybe to the solar logos, from man as his entirety, to what? To some still greater being. If man in his entirety, including the monad, is as an abdominal organ, a cell in an abdominal organ, then what sort of being are we talking about? I believe that being, although, you know, I have to think still more deeply upon it, would be off this chart. This is the largest chart that we are given, and this chart itself would be simply the etheric physical plane of a, not just of a cosmic logos or a one about whom naught may be said, but we'd be dealing now with the super cosmic planes and not just with the cosmic planes. And you can continue to collapse these planes into physicality. Even the seven, even that being for whom this entire plane is just a subplane, so you'd have seven of these, even that combination of seven could be collapsed into an etheric physical plane in relation to the super-super cosmic planes. Well, I think we get the idea, and that it extends way, way beyond our ken. Like I say, if we can't control our astral body, what are we doing talking about these things? But still we are. So a still greater relationship or interplay is given. In this interplay of lives and their emanating streams of force and energies, forces and energies, and in the major determining life activities of that, in which all forms, including the human, live and move and have their being, is to be found the inevitability of ultimate achievement, because the interplay gives us this. You know, the gifts of the spirit are always to lift the emanated aspects of that spirit back into the full spirit potential. The inevitable inevitability of ultimate achievement, the unalterability of law, and the expression, finally, of divine unchangeable purpose. It all depends what we mean by that. And by that, I tend to think of, in this context, at least the universal logos. There is one being in whom all beings live and move and have their being, or one existence in whom all existences in cosmos live and move and have their being. So, in this interplay of lives with a capital L and their emanating streams of force and energies, and in the major determining life activities of that in which all forms, including the human, live and move and have their being, is to be found the inevitability of ultimate achievement, the unalterability of law, and the expression, finally, of divine, unchangeable purpose in the highest sense that we can conceive it. Let me just write. So, in the evolutionary effects of this relation of life to form is to be found also the undeviating way of an expanding, ever-unfolding consciousness, whether it be macrocosmic or microcosmic. Hence, the will of God moves the worlds, and the love of God determines results. The love of God brings all the various emanations into new combinations of relationship. And this love is not archetypal at first. It has much arranging and rearranging to do before it really reflects the archetype. So the way back to the archetype, or the way back to the purpose, is not determined. And there is much spontaneity in the love of God, which will determine the facility with which the various emanations configure and reconfigure themselves on the way back to archetypal arrangement. It is the great will which is the power that drives all things, but is the movement of the world necessarily archetypal at first? Well, because of the limited knowledge and consciousness of the emanations, they are in essence that from which they came, but they are not in their consciousness, the full consciousness of that from which they came. So there is the driving force of the will, but it is love which configures these moving emanations in such a way that they eventually configure themselves in line with archetypal purpose. And all the time, each emanation is ever expanding and unfolding the consciousness, which is equivalent to emanative retraction, you know, coming closer and closer to the consciousness of that from which it came. It is the great love which is making possible the constant expansion of consciousness, because whenever there is a configuration which reflects the higher archetype, there will be a type of consciousness which is analogous to that of the archetype. So the more archetypal our relationships, the greater the consciousness. Now, as to whether we will, you know, somehow it seems that we're, every once in a while, the Tibetan gives one of these almost outrageous analogies, you know, where what we thought was so high turns out to be like the tip of one's little, a cell in the tip of one's little finger. We are involved in a cosmic logos who is what I would call a solar plexus center in the one about whom not may be said. The solar plexus center rules the digestive organs. And this this cosmic logos is expressing on one of the cosmic planes, just the way the solar logos does as well. Now, whether the monadic nature of the cosmic logos can actually be found on these seven cosmic planes, or whether his expression is simply here on these planes, but his true higher monadic essence is on one of the supercosmic planes. I think it would take me some hours to try to figure that out, but I simply point in the direction of the possibility. Because our local cosmic logos is, I believe, this is the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. This is the being who works with the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Because this being represents the solar plexus, the abdominal organs are ruled thereby. And there is an analogy here, I think, between man as a possible cell or organ, cell or atom in an abdominal organ, and this great cosmic logos as a solar plexus, which is the life behind what stands for abdominal organs on a very high level. I'm just pointing the direction here in terms of some possible speculations. It would work out our analogical powers. It would improve our analogical powers to work on such things, and maybe the time will come when we can. I don't want to spend the hours necessary right now to do this. Suffice it to say, there's a very great difference between the being we are talking about and man, the personality, or man in his entire energy system. If we're just talking about man, the personality, then the analogous being is very high. If we're looking at man in his entire six-planed energy system, then the inclusive being we're talking about is even higher, because the larger the item, the greater must be the encompassing being in order to maintain the same proportion. Well, that's probably quite enough on that. I don't know if I've come close at all, but as I said, I've had to fill in here because there was a problem with the headset. You know, sometimes I go on quite a while and I don't notice when I have this headset off and when I have it on.